This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello, a writer and researcher at MLB.com, joined by Matt Myers, MLB.com National Content Editor. It is Thursday morning, May 27th. We are going to talk about the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. explosion, the most insane stat line I think I've ever seen coming out of Chicago. Thank you, Yasmani Grandal. We're going to talk about whether the rise in strikeouts is everything it seems, and look into how the National League West race kind of rules again before we each rant and rave and come up with our random guys we're going to see. Matt, today, that's Thursday morning from our point of view, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to participate in a doubleheader here in New York. The Blue Jays got rained out last night, and the Rockies are also here in New York to play the Mets, and they got rained out last night. And so I briefly, before we got on our little podcast this morning, thought to myself, I should go look up how random it is to see multiple doubleheaders in the same city in the same day. And it turns out, of course, our friend and colleague Sarah Langs already did this for me.
Obviously.
But wait, I can top her. Okay. So she wrote this morning at the site, and you should check it out because it's really interesting. In the expansion era, so since 1961, this will be the fifth time that one city has played host to two doubleheaders on the same day, right? And three of those times were in New York. One of those times was in Chicago. However, I want to add something on top of that. Last night in Brooklyn, the minor league Brooklyn Cyclones also got rained out, and they are also playing a doubleheader today. So we have six professional baseball games in the five boroughs of New York. I have no idea how to look that up. I'm just going to say that's the most. So I know not all of our listeners live here, but if you do, there's lots of baseball to go see today. You should definitely do it.
And part of the reason we're recording so early is because I'm going to the Mets-Rockies doubleheader. I did not even realize it was going to be a doubleheader until late last night. I love a good doubleheader. Actually, I've got some good doubleheader memories. I was at, in 1998, I was at a doubleheader at Shea Stadium where Mark McGwire, this was during the year he hit 70 home runs, hit his 50th home run in game one and his 51st home run in game two, which was pretty awesome because it was at that point, it was like late August where I was like, oh, he might actually break the record. And sure enough, he did. And then I have probably my favorite doubleheader memory is, I think it was June 1986. It might've been Father's Day. I'm not sure. I think it was Father's Day. And my mom had the idea of like, oh, let's go to the Mets game for Father's Day. This will be great. And then we show up and she discovers that it is a doubleheader. And, I still remember the look on her face when she made that discovery.
Did you stay for all 18?
I believe so because, you know, back then, like now, I could not get enough baseball, especially live baseball, and they were not going to drag me away from a doubleheader. How about you? Do you have any notable doubleheader memories?
I really only one comes to mind, and it's not even a great one, honestly. Like 10 years ago or so, I wanted to go see the Dodgers playing at Citi. It was like maybe the year Citi Field opened, and it was like mid-April and it got rained out, right? So the next day there's a doubleheader. I'm like, great, I'm gonna go see two Dodgers Mets games. It's gonna be great. And you know, the weather wasn't all that different from the day before, so it was still like 40 degrees and pouring for the whole time. And somehow my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, didn't break up with me after that because I made her stay with me. So there's that one. So you are gonna see Rockies at Mets today, and I'm sure that'll be fine. But personally, I think I'd rather see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because, wow, I don't want to say people wrote him off too soon because he was too young, but he was definitely more of like a above average hitter than a superstar for the first 2 years. And then what he's done this year, I'm not even sure that the word breakout is strong enough. You know, he's gone from, I think we were hoping he'd go from solid hitter to all-star hitter. And now he's basically the MVP of the league or Ohtani, right? It's them because Trout's hurt. I guess you could say Bogarts or Devers maybe. But what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is doing is monumental. He's right now hitting .337, a .447 on base, a .674 slugging percentage. If you like weighted runs created plus, where 100 is league average, Well, he's at a 203. Do that math for a second. It's really good. My favorite part about this, like everybody wanted to talk about, well, he's got to raise his launch angle. I hate talking about launch angle. I really do. That's not my favorite part. He's got 31 walks and 29 strikeouts. And if you watch him, the most impressive thing, okay, I guess the most impressive thing would be the laser beams he hits at 118 miles an hour. But to me, it's just, you can see the difference in his plate discipline. Like he's gotten to this level where it's, I don't want to say like it's Juan Soto with 118 miles an hour power, but he's at that level where he's just spitting on pitches that are like millimeters off the plate. And I've almost elevated him to that Joey Votto status of, if he and the umpire disagree, then it is the umpire who is wrong. You know what I mean? Like that is what has stood out to me the most about him this year.
The funny thing to me is that obviously you can't help but compare him to his father, a Hall of Fame hitter. And you know, in some ways, in like their setup at the plate, there's similarities, and we've also seen Vlad Jr., especially like in his first year or so in the league, he had a lot of like bad ball hits. But in some ways, when I look at him, his breakout is basically almost, I don't want to say tied directly to being less like his dad, but it's like his approach is now diverging from his father. I mean, his father was special because he swung at everything and hit everything, and there was no one really else like him. But Vlad, the big change I see is like he's chasing a lot less, and actually he's making contact a lot less when he chases, which is good, because when you chase and make contact, generally, unless you're Vladimir Guerrero Sr., you're making bad contact. For example, last year his chase rate was almost 25%. This year it's below 20%. And last year, his chase contact rate was 56%. This year, it's 39%. So right there, you're seeing a big difference in that, like, he's not chasing as much. And when he does chase, he's actually missing, which is actually better. And so I think that's kind of cool and kind of interesting that, yeah, he's like his dad, but in some ways, like, his ascent is in sort of, he's like, I don't want to live your life, dad. I'm going to be different. I'm going to be my own man. And well, that's kind of what we're seeing.
Yeah, no, it's cool all around. And like I said, you know, everybody talked about elevating, and he has, you know, his ground ball rate is down from 55% to 47%. And when you can hit the ball at 118, it certainly does a lot more damage in the air. I think we've talked about before how he has the largest increase in sprint speed from last year to this year. And not that anyone really cares about how fast he runs, because that's not his game, but he talked so much about getting into better shape and improving his conditioning and improving his flexibility. And it's cool to see like that running speed number match up with that, because have you seen him do the splits at first base? Yeah. They are so cool. Like he's a much better defensive first baseman than I think I thought he would be. And in ways that we probably don't even track that well, like his range is fine, that's whatever. But the way he does the splits to try to help what is a pretty rough defensive infield. Like Biggio's not a good third baseman. Bichette's not a great shortstop. Semien's been good at second base, but they make a lot of wild throws, and they have made him work to corral those.
Yeah, it's really been impressive all around. I think in some ways he was almost like, I mean, when he came up, there was talk from people who, you know, like from like folks like Jim Callis, and Jim Callis is not someone known for hyperbole. He was like, this, you know, this is like the best pure hitting prospect, maybe not of all time, but in the conversation, right? But I think Vlad Jr. was almost a little bit of a victim of like when he came up, because he came up a year after Soto and Acuna, who like hit the ground running. And I think he came up like a month after Tatis, who also kind of hit the ground running. So it was like, well, obviously this guy is just going to hit the ground running too and be a star from day one. And it doesn't always work like that. I'll admit I was a little concerned by what we saw, not necessarily because it was pretty clear he was going to be a good player, but I was like, is he ever going to reach his ceiling, because he was hitting the ball on the ground too much? And like, you know, then I think I might've said this on the pod at some point in the off season, the name that came to mind to me was Delmon Young, who was, you know, sort of number one overall prospect, but also like, you know, what, you know, scouts maybe would call a bad body guy. And when he got to the big leagues, it just like never fully came together. And that was sort of like the sort of like red flag I had in my head for Vlad. I was like, is he going to ever fully reach his ceiling? And obviously we're 2 months into the season, and I think it's clear that this is the guy we thought he was. And it's really, he's one of the more fun guys to watch the plate right now.
No, absolutely. And I don't want to take anything away from him, but I have to at least point out his insane home road splits. So the Blue Jays have finished their portion of their season where they call Dunedin home. The next time they play a home game, I think next week, they will be in Buffalo. And it's unclear whether they'll spend the rest of the year in Buffalo or make it back to Toronto at some point. But as expected, the TD ballpark in Dunedin played like a pretty extreme hitter's park. Here are his home road splits. At home, he hit 410, that's a batting average of 410, 521 on base, a slugging percentage of almost 900, and an OPS north of 1400. On the road, 277 average, 382 on base, 489 slugging. I'm not going to make too much of home road splits over 2 months because, you know, part of it is the home runs he hits would go out of literally any park on the planet. Like, that's how serious they are. But I don't also think he's going to keep up a 203 weighted runs created plus all year long. Is that underselling it a little bit?
Yeah, but see, but look at it. Even that away, that his away line, 277, 382, 49. I mean, most players hit better at home anyway. So let's say he's, you know, 10% better than that at home. That's, you're still looking at a 300, 400, 500 line right there, which is, you know, more than elite.
It's good. It's is he going to win the MVP?
I mean, again, it obviously, it depends on you know, how well the team plays, basically, right? It's like,
does that still matter? I feel like that doesn't matter. I mean,
it does stink,
and Trout wins MVPs.
It's not the only factor, but it is a factor, and there's still enough. I think that there's, like, you know, he's certainly right now, he's in the conversation. If the season ends today, it's probably him or Otani in the American League, but obviously Otani also plays for an even worse team. But you also just have to kind of like keep the possibilities open of like someone having a crazy second half for the White Sox and then running with the division and like the, sort of getting like a narrative, you know, MVP or the A's or Astros for that matter, or the Red Sox. I mean, like Xander Bogaerts, you know, like there's other names, but certainly he's on the short list right now.
Mostly, I just hope we get another crack at him in the home run derby, which will be in Coors Field this year, because I think that would be super fun. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
We are back on the Ballpark Dimensions podcast, Mike and Matt. We are going to start our three-batter minimum with maybe my favorite stat line ever. Close to it. Yasmani Grandal, catcher for the Chicago White Sox, is hitting 136, and yet I still get to say he's an above-average hitter, which I think is maybe stretching the limits of how much you can diminish batting average to most people. But he's hitting 136 with a 391 on base and a 364 slugging percentage. That is a 116 OPS plus, which almost completely matches his career OPS plus of 115. He's hitting 136. He's 16% above average. Everything is weird. If you're wondering if that is the lowest batting average ever, with an OPS plus of 100 or better, so like basically what's the lowest you can hit and still be an average or better hitter, it is Frank Fernandez from the 1968 Yankees. I cannot say I'm super familiar with Mr. Fernandez. Hit 170 with an OPS plus of 125. Now, what should stand out to you about that? What year did he do it in? 1968. It's a little easier to have above average production when the league average of everything is so low. And if you look at how Grandal is doing it, he is absolutely refusing to swing the bat. Like, he will not swing. He has a 25% swing rate. That is the lowest on record with anybody who's got as many plate appearances as he does. And I think the record on that goes back to like 2002 or 8. I can't remember now. But anyway, he doesn't swing. And that has led to a walk rate of 29.5%. Now, dig this. I know this leaderboard is stupid and, you know, small samples and you're comparing it to larger samples, but I don't care because it's very funny to me. If you go back to the beginning of integrated baseball, 1947, and you look at every season with at least 125 plate appearances, and you look at the highest walk rates, number 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 on that list are Barry Bonds seasons between 2001 and 2007, right? Five of the top six walk rate seasons of all times are by arguably the greatest hitter who ever lived, and also Yasmani Grandal, which is like, what even? What is this?
It's so bizarre. And if you want to also, I love it. Like, I'm looking at his Baseball Savant page, and you look at like his expected stats, his expected batting average is 177. So he's like coming by it honestly. Like, this is like, it's the batting average is not like out of line with what you would expect. But I just like, why is anyone throwing him anything but just like fastballs and daring him to swing? Like, he's refusing to swing. It's like the little leaguer who knows he can't hit. It's like, I'm just gonna hope I'm gonna take a walk, and it's working.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been a patient kind of guy. Like, it's not totally out of nowhere for him to draw a walk. And I know earlier in the spring he was dealing with a knee issue. I don't know if that's had any impact at all. But what's funny is that when he has decided to swing and hit the ball, he's actually hitting it hard.
This is
like
true.
His hard hit rate is usually like, you know, 40% or so. And this year it is 54%. Like, he's got as many barrels, and, you know, barrels are like the perfect combination of launch angle and exit velocity this year as he did last year, right? And you're right. Like, if you look at the percentage of pitches in the strike zone, it's down, but not by a lot. Like, it's usually 46, 47%. And this year it's 43%. Like, why would you do anything but throw him a first pitch strike, which he's only gotten after three times all year? You can't lob batting practice fastballs because he hits the ball hard. But why are you throwing him anything outside the zone? Like, even once? Why? He will not swing at it. He's like, did you see like 2 weeks ago when Taijuan Walker was batting against Matt Harvey, and we didn't know it at the time, but Walker was a little bit injured, right? So he was like, I'm not going to swing. And he just stood there with the bat and refused to move a muscle. That is basically what Grandal is doing. Like, why? I don't have an answer for this. I just like shouting at it, basically.
That is actually a very good segue to our next topic about the rise in strikeouts this year for 2021, and maybe how the rise in strikeouts is not what it appears to be on its face. And you wrote a piece about this this week.
I did. So strikeouts are up in baseball. You've heard this before. I think everyone's familiar with that. We are on track to have the strikeout rate either hold steady or rise for the 15th year in a row. I think the last time it didn't happen was 2004 to 2005, so 16 years in a row. And we know all the reasons for this. We've talked about them ad nauseum, right? Pitchers are dominant. They throw harder with more spin and more movement, and they do it in shorter stints. No one's going four times through the order anymore. We know all this. But what I found interesting was that if you take out pitchers batting this year, and you just look at position players batting, there really isn't a rise from last year. Last year, it was 23.4%, and this year it's 23.5%, which is basically nothing. Now, what was the big difference from last year to this year? Well, there are a lot of big differences, but the one that's applicable here is that last year, pitchers didn't bat. We had the DH in the National League. That is not the case this year. Now, I don't know if you know this, pitchers are brutally terrible hitters, but like really bad. You know, they've always been bad. Here's what they're hitting so far this year. 104, 139, 136. They have a strikeout rate of 47%. And you reintroduce that kind of absolutely non-competitive hitting into the ecosystem, that kind of explains the jump from last year to this year. I want to be careful with it. I don't want to say that this means that like the strikeout rise has plateaued. I don't believe that's true. I just think that you've added all of these truly atrociously bad pitcher hitting plate appearances, and I feel like you need to kind of like filter those out in some way. The other thing I want to point out, because I just found this deeply funny when I was writing this piece, Matt, I know you know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it as a question anyway. What year was this quote from the Sporting News written? Every patron of the game is conversant with the utter worthlessness of the average pitcher when he goes up to try to hit the ball. Now, I tweeted that question out and I got, you know, oh, 1962, 1973, maybe. No, 1891. People have been saying pitchers can't hit for 130 years and probably further back than that. I think we're on the same page. Correct me if I'm wrong. I never had a strong opinion about the DH. I generally did not feel passionately about it one way or the other. I grew up a National League fan. I didn't care. And then last year, watching no pitchers bat, at no point did I say, man, I wish a pitcher was up here striking out. And now I'm all in. I'm bringing the DH on. This is brutal.
Yeah, no, it's because the other thing is it also feels like a lot of pitchers. I mean, because what seems to happen, it's almost like a silent protest. It almost feels like where like a lot of these pitchers are like, you know what? Like, I'm trying to stay healthy. It's a long year. I can't, you know, I'm not even going to try. And like, it's funny because I'm like looking at I'm looking at a list of the pitchers based on worst batting averages, minimum 10 plate appearances. And there are even guys who have like good reputations as hitting pitchers who are like Adam Wainwright is 0 for 15 this year. Brandon Woodruff is 0 for 17 this year. These are like guys who are considered like two of like the good, you know, good hitting pitchers, right? Like, it almost feels like, and you mentioned like Taijuan Walker, he was like a little sore and he was just like, I'm not even going to swing. And so it's just, it's not pretty.
Did you see DeGrom's return the other night against the Rockies and Kyle Freeland was up and you're like, oh, it's a pitcher. You know, he won't brutalize this man. And he's like, oh, here's 101 at the top of the zone. Good luck with that.
Yeah. So it's good context. Cause I think that we did forget that pitchers didn't hit last year and that like, we have to like, it almost just like rejigger our brains a little bit of like what that means, pitchers hitting, and they're not good and maybe even worse than ever. And that's really, it is actually kind of, I don't want to say misleading us a little bit, but it's throwing off the bigger picture.
I agree with that. The other thing I wanted to point out is, you know, people will correctly say, well, pitchers don't last that long in games. They're not getting 3 or 4 plate appearances. Like how many plate appearances can pitchers be getting? And that's true. It's only like 5 or 6%, but there is, I think, some sort of like post pitcher hitting effect in the sense that when pitchers are removed, they have to be pinch hit for, and those pinch hitters are generally not starting players. You know, they're bench players who are not as capable as the starters. And then there's also like a well-documented pitch hitting penalty where if you come off the bench cold, you're likely to be a little worse. And pinch hitters are also striking out at the highest level ever at 30%. So you've got that lineup spot. So it's like you've got a pitcher who can't hit, and then he's replaced by a pinch hitter who's not as good as the regular hitters. And even if the pitcher is not taking that plate appearances, it's still like there's echoes of it. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm ready. Bring on the DH. Just like bring it to me. Hopefully at some point in the near future.
Yeah. And to that point, that's why one of the popular sort of like DH fixes that's been tossed around, the baseball internet circles is like, hey, how about instead of the DH, we do, I forget that there's a term for it.
The hook.
We're basically like you get the DH until your starting pitcher comes out and then you lose the DH, at which point you have to use pinch, you know, like, and when I first heard that idea, I was like, ooh, that kind of sounds fun. Cause I like kind of, you know, things that maybe add elements of strategy and like it's actually like a little too gimmicky.
Yeah.
It's like for the reason you mentioned, cause you're still going to get pinch hitters who are not as good. You know, they lower the bar, and I like the idea. I like the thinking, but I'm sort of just like, let's just go DH all across the board.
No, my idea is better. Just eight man lineups. Lose the pitcher, lose the DH. Let's do it.
The benefit of that, you get, you know, more at bats from Vlad Jr.
Exactly.
More at bats from Mike Trout. So there's a benefit there.
I'm sorry, Nelson Cruz. I'm sorry. Nothing personal. Our third item here is the National League West race kind of rules again. The Padres are 9-1 in their last 10. The Dodgers have won 8 of their last 10. The Giants have won 7 of their last 10. The Padres have a very, very slim lead in the National League West. And if you look at the run differential leaders for the season across the Major League Baseball, this is why we don't do podcasts this early before we've had coffee. Anyway, the top 4 teams in run differential, 3 of them are in the National League West. The Padres are first. The Dodgers are second. The Giants are fourth. The White Sox are third. And it's kind of fun because, you know, what did we talk about at the beginning of the year? The Dodgers are going to be this all-time great team. The Padres are maybe the second best team in baseball. And they both like got off to good starts and then sputtered for a bit while the Giants kind of stepped up. And now look at it. I mean, these three teams are playing phenomenally. I don't know if you've noticed, but in six games back for Fernando Tatis, he's hitting 600, 640, 1400, which is just hilarious. And the Dodgers are about to get stronger because Cody Bellinger is expected to return from injury this weekend. And they haven't really been getting like peak Mookie Betts. You know, like he's been, it's hard to complain too much about good defense and a line 25% above average, but that's not, it's not peak Betts. You know, like their starting rotation has been fantastic. They're missing Seager, obviously. Max Muncy's been kind of fun because he has a 455 on base and a 21% walk rate, but also he's slugging over 500. Like Max Muncy is their best player right now, which I don't think I would have saw coming. And I still, I'm not out on the Giants. Like I think this race is maybe not going to be what we thought it would be 2 months ago, but it's maybe even going to be more interesting now if the Giants actually stick around.
A couple things I was been glad to be wrong about. I think I was skeptical of the Padres being able to hang with the Dodgers. And my view on that has changed a little bit. I think their staying power has, you know, impressed me in ways. Especially they were sort of able to tread water with Tatis out. The second thing I was glad I was wrong about is when Tatis went down with that shoulder injury, in my head, I was like, I don't care what the Padres say. This guy's out. You know, this guy's going to be out a while. Like, they were like, oh, it's not that serious. But, like, when you see guys, like, hurt their shoulder like that on a swing, it just feels like it's going to be a while. No matter, you know, teams are always trying to downplay injuries. And I was like, oh, this is a disaster. And, man, that has not been the case because he's come back and he's been the best version of Tatis in all phases of the game. And it's really great to see.
I'm gonna say most phases of the game because his defense has taken a big step back again this year. Like he was really good last year, and now he looks like rookie Tatis again. And they still are not necessarily firing on all cylinders. Like Machado's been only okay. Tommy Pham hasn't been good. Trent Grisham is hurt. Drew Pomeranz is hurt. Yu Darvish has been fantastic. I feel like we're not maybe talking about that enough. Like he has 74 strikeouts and 13 walks. He's been really good. Meanwhile, Blake Snell has, I don't know, he's been Blake Snell, I guess. He's a 450 ERA, lots of strikeouts, too many walks, and doesn't go deep into games.
He is who he is. That one I feel like I was kind of right about. I was vindicated on. But they're making up for it in other ways. One thing that's great about the Padres, and I think that's part of like their fun, is that they're really using their speed on the bases. Like they lead the league with 57 stolen bases. Number two, the Royals have 36 stolen bases. They have 21 more stolen bases than any other team. The Reds have 9 stolen bases. The Padres have 57. they're an athletic team. I mean, they're turning out to be like, you know, that was part of their appeal. I think a part of their excitement is like they have, you know, a dynamic lineup and they're using it because it's also not just one guy. Like Tatis has 11 steals, Profar has 8, Grisham has 7, Machado, Pham have 6, Will Myers and Hosmer have a few. Like it's up and down the lineup, and they used it against the Brewers the other night and the stolen bases to get a win, and like it's a fun team.
Here's a Dodger question for you. You look at their starting rotation right now, you know, Kershaw, Bauer, Urias and Buehler. Who's the number 4 starter there?
I don't know.
Is it Bauer? Like Kershaw has been great. Urias has been great. Bueller. I mean, they've all been great. But like, there's not really a right answer or a wrong answer to this. But their number 4 starter is an ace on how many teams right now?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I was looking at Bauer the other day. Like his when we like run values for on Baseball Savant, Baseball Savant run values. His 4-seam fastball is the highest run value of any 4-seamer in baseball.
I'm going to give you a mini rant here before we get to our regular rant. Last year, you know, like it was with the Cincinnati. And if you remember, the divisions were just like the Easts would only play the Easts and the Centrals and Centrals. I can't tell you how many people I heard from saying he was only good because the Central batters were bad. And I was like, no, like that's definitely not true. That is not what's happening. And oh, he's got a 198 ERA out here in a different division. I feel vindicated on that one.
I mean, I thought that one might have been a factor, but I didn't think it was the only reason to be good because he's also been really good before, like with Cleveland in 2018. So like it wasn't like this was a fluke. He had not sustained, you know, a low 2 ERA for his career, but it seems like he has now established himself as that guy.
All right, and finally, are the Giants going to stick around?
I don't think they're going to stick around with those two teams, but right now you look at the wild card race, and I think that, you know, that's. you know, there was a belief, I think, going into the season, the AL East might get three playoff teams. That's looking less like the case right now. And I think the Giants are really well positioned there. The most interesting guy on that team to me is Kevin Gausman, who is really good again and pitching like an ace, and also is a free agent after this season and young enough that this guy is kind of a dude. And I'm not sure that the baseball world has fully taken notice of that. You know, he was once a really high draft pick, never really put together in Baltimore or a couple of other places he's been. But now he looks like that guy that was once the number four overall pick. And I think the Giants are legit as wild card contender legit. That's my kind of take.
Someday someone's going to write a whole book on how the 2013-ish Orioles could never figure out how to get the best out of Dylan Bundy or Jake Arrieta or Kevin Gausman. And then built a great bullpen. I don't know. I thought that's just kind of fun to look back upon. I don't know if he lasts the season there. How about that? Right. I mean, he signed to a 1-year deal. Do you think they might trade him because they could get something really big?
No, because if they're in the race, they're not going to trade him. And I also think that the Giants are at a position where they're a team that has been willing to spend before. And I could see them, extend. I mean, I don't know if he's someone who doesn't want to sign an extension during the season or what, but I could see them extending him as part of hey, we want to keep some continuity here. He's young enough that he can be part of what we're building here. I don't think they would trade him if they're even in a wild card race.
Well, I'm just excited that the West is kind of looking like the West again, and even better than we thought maybe it would be. And this weekend, Giants at Dodgers, which would be a pretty fun way to spend the holiday weekend. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and finish off the Ballpark Dimensions podcast.
This past year has shown us that without your health, you have nothing. If you're not well, you can't work, look after yourself, or take care of your family. You can't enjoy the life you've worked so hard to build. That's why you need to prioritize taking care of your long-term health today, before it goes from good to bad to worse. So invest in your long-term health with Forward. Forward is intelligent medicine with a personal touch. Their doctors are dedicated to catching top killers like cancer and heart disease early, before it's too late. And catching them early could save you tens of thousands of dollars in the long run. Everyone's health history is different, which is why Forward doctors personalize a health plan with you, based on your genetics, lifestyle, and biometrics to achieve long-term results and ensure nothing gets missed. It's time to invest in a doctor that's invested in you. Go to GoForward.com today to protect your future health. That's GoForward.com. GoForward.com.
Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. Each week, Matt and I like to highlight a random guy that you need to know more about. And each week, Matt gives me a hard time for picking random relievers. And it's true. I do it a lot. I've got a little running notepad list of guys I might want to talk about. And I figured now was a great time to talk about one of them who's been on my list for a month because he just got traded. That is JP Feiereisen, who is now a member of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's a pretty interesting guy for a few reasons. He was a 16th round pick by Cleveland in 2014. He's been traded three times since, to the Yankees in 2016 in that big Andrew Miller, Clint Frazier deal, to the Brewers in 2019 for international slot money, somewhat less interesting, and then a couple of days ago to Tampa Bay in the deal for Willie Adames. When I saw that he got traded to the Rays, I immediately thought, oh yeah, that tracks. I mean, not that the Brewers aren't also an analytically inclined team, but when you look at the fastball, the four-seam fastball rise leaderboards this year, who gets the most rising action on their fastball? Number one is JP Feiereisen right now. And it's a pretty fun list because Trevor Bauer is number two, Sean Doolittle's number four. Those are two of the guys at the top of the narrative for that sort of thing. Number three, Caleb Barragar. Good to know. Anyway, Feiereisen has 97th percentile spin. He's clearly getting the most out of it. In his first 17 games for the Brewers this year, spanning 16 innings, he allowed zero earned runs. Now, he's got this rising fastball. He is also in the top 30 in changeup drop. How much above average does your changeup drop vertically? And if you were to look at our run value leaderboards for pitch type, he hasn't pitched enough to be at the top if you just look at raw numbers. But if you sort it by run value over 100 pitches, here's the changeup list. Okay, number four, Hansel Robles. Okay, number three, John Means. Yeah. Number two, Garrett Cole. That's cool. Number one, JP Fireisen. He's thrown it 79 times. He's allowed one hit, 14 strikeouts. I don't think the Brewers didn't know what they had, obviously, but they badly needed a shortstop. But man, he is the raziest guy to ever be a Ray, and I can't wait to see how he's going to play for them.
Yeah, sometimes with trades like that, I'm sure the Brewers knew what they had, but they're like, all right, you want him? We weren't trading for guys going to be our starting shortstop. Like, you know, good on your Rays. Like, see what you can do with them. So, definitely a crazy kind of guy. I'm going to keep it in Florida for my random guy we should be talking more about. And I feel like I've been all in on the Marlins this year because the Marlins have a lot of interesting guys. And, you know, we've talked a bit about Trevor Rogers on the show. I want to talk about Pablo Lopez, who's kind of been on my watch list of like, hey, pitchers who could be pretty good for a while now. And he hasn't really put it together. But it turns out that, like, if you just say, you know what, I'm just going to throw my best pitch most of the time, that works. He is now throwing his changeup more often than any other pitch, and it's working, right? So in 2018, which I think was the first year where he kind of got on people's radars when he had a 4.14 ERA, he was throwing his changeup 19% of the time, then went up to 22, then up to 30, and now he's throwing his changeup 35% of the time. He's got a 2.73 ERA, 3.06 expected ERA, so he's coming by it honestly, and that four seam fastball he has is playing up as a result. He throws five pitches, but it's, you know, mostly a four seam and a change. And he has got a -7 run value on that four seamer, which is among the league leaders. He also has some of the best stirrups in the game, which I think is worth noting because you know, he's got a very distinct look when he is on the mound, when he was wearing City Connect uniforms for the Marlins with the high stirrups. It's a pretty fantastic look. Those City Connect uniforms the Marlins are wearing are fantastic. And he's like a guy that kind of came out of nowhere. He was I went back and looked at the end of the 2017 season. The MLB Pipeline crew had him ranked number 30 out of 30, you know, on the top 30 for the Marlins top prospects. So he just barely made the top 30 prospects at the end of 2017. He's now firmly in their very good rotation. The Marlins are one of the better run prevention teams in the league this year, ranked seventh in pitching WAR in baseball. And they're interesting. And they're doing this despite, and like a lot of teams, they've had guys miss a lot of time. You know, Jazz Chisholm missed a lot of time. Starling Marte's barely played and was playing very well when he was playing. So they're firmly in that mix. And Pablo Lopez is a big reason why.
I'm really glad you brought up the stirrups, because if you didn't, I was going to. It's such a good, and they're like the old school stirrups too.
Exactly.
It's not just like showing sock, it's like stirrups. I love that. All right, we are going to finish off for Matt and I. You each have our purpose pitch, which is something we get to rant about. For me, I think one of the bigger series of this week has been in Houston, where the Dodgers are playing the Astros in Houston. I don't know if there's any history between those two teams, especially with Clayton Kershaw on the mound. And that's sort of what I want to rant about, is that, you know, there is like a subset of Astros fans who insist that not only did the Astros do nothing wrong in 2017, but that other teams did worse things. And that came up again this week because the Dodgers were there and that stirred up some feelings. And because former catcher Eric Kratz said he thought he knew something about the Rockies, which we have no idea if it's true or not. And there's just like this Astros Twitter group that's like, oh, they did it worse. Nothing happened. It's like, guys, come on. You did. You got in trouble for it. Like, it's real. I don't even think it helped that much. Like, morally wrong, I don't think it won New World Series. That team was, I always go back to like before 2017, there are two articles. I wrote one. Jeff Sullivan, formerly of Fangraphs, wrote the other before that season saying, hey, this team's going to strike out a lot less. Like, it was so easily predictable. So I don't even think it helped that much. I'm not defending the trash can cheating. Like, it's real and it happened. But like, I feel bad for the quote unquote regular Astros fans who like have nothing to do with any of this and just want to watch their team play a ball game without getting yelled at. You know what I mean? It's like everybody else, just let it come on. It happened. Let's not pretend it didn't happen here. This is a real thing that happened. Come on.
That's how I look at it. It's like, it happened. You know, I don't know how much it helped them. They were a great team anyway, but it happened. They deserve the ridicule. That's it. The fans, you know, you had the moment. You got to enjoy that moment. They're like, you know, no one's going to take that away from you. Like, they won the World Series. I'm sure that was a magical, like, month of October watching your favorite team win the World Series. You know, this whole thing didn't come out till like 2 years later. So like, yeah, it stinks if you're a fan and it's now tarnished, but like you had the moment, and that's to me like really, really what matters if you're a fan, right? Is you got to celebrate that moment. So you just gotta accept the sort of shame that comes with it and move on. It's still a competitive team. Again, it's still a good team now with a lot of the same core, which kind of proves the point that it was like a very good team to begin with.
And if I can just point out quickly, do you know which team has the lowest strikeout rate in baseball this year?
Houston Astros.
Houston Astros. I mean, that's mostly Michael Brantley, I think. But
my purpose pitch is about one of the unintended consequences of instant replay that I absolutely cannot stand, and I really hope we can figure out a way to make it go away. And what I'm talking about is when the player slides over a base and leaves the base for like a half second, and the fielder, you know, smartly understanding the rules, keeps the tag on, and they call them out on replay review. It's against the spirit of the rule. It penalizes players who are trying to be daring on the base paths, which is what we want. It's exciting. It's just awful. It also stops the game. It's awful. Like, I was watching the Mets game the other night. Jonathan Villar stole second, then he stole third, and he was called safe. And then they replayed it, and it's not even like he went past the bag. Like, he slid head first, and like for a half second, his like belly, his stomach like was like hovering over the base. And they like held the tag on, and they went and reviewed it, and they called him out. And like, yeah, I kind of get it by like the way the rules are applied now, you have to call him out, but it's just like, that shouldn't be the case. It's like, you're slowing down the game. You're taking away excitement. I mean, part of the fun, and this has happened in a lot of sports, like no worse than like in soccer, where like the video replay for offsides has basically made it so you can never celebrate a goal your team scored until like 5 minutes later. Is like, you want that excitement of being able to celebrate a play when it happened. And it just ruins what should be exciting plays, which is guys taking extra bases and forcing, you know, close plays and throws and snap tags. It's awful. You know, later in the game, you mentioned, you know, DeGrom's game back. Jacob DeGrom, who's been like the Mets' best hitter, like looped a ball down the right field line and tried to stretch it in a double. I'm sure like the Mets management was like, no, what are you doing? And he beat the tag. And of course, he did like a pop-up slide, and he popped up for like half a second, and they kept the tag on him, and they like went and reviewed it. Like, he was called safe, and they went and reviewed it, and they called him out. I think it's just, it's a bad viewing experience. And I think it violates kind of the spirit of what we want from replay and what we want baseball players doing. And I hope that, you know, as part of the next, whatever collective bargaining agreement or rules for 2022, we figure out a way to maybe have some sort of like ruling that can sort of make it so that those plays are no longer reviewable, or they won't be overturned unless it's like, you know, obvious the player went past the bag or tried to advance or something of that nature.
How do you fix it?
I think there's a few ways. I mean, the one I would like to see that I think won't happen is almost going to like a little league style, where you almost even have like the bases that like because I think it would also be good for player safety if you had bases that popped off when you slid through them, like you have in like little league, because players wouldn't hurt themselves sliding into bases. You wouldn't have players breaking their fingers or twisting their ankles sliding into bases anymore. And that, like, if you do that and the base moves, you're safe unless you try and stand up. That would at least it would be safe, and it would be like the clearest way to do it. You know, you could also do things where this wouldn't apply to the DeGrom play, but I think you could do something where it's like, only can be called out on review if you actually went past the base. Like, you know, if you literally went past the base, you can get called out, which I think a pop-up slide popping off the base would count as going past the base. But I think a head first slide, if you did not go past the base, you should not be, or even a feet first slide, if you're like your front leg, you know, pops up for a second while you're going over the bag, almost like a safety zone, like an infinite safety zone that goes straight up into the sky. That if you stay hovered over the bag, you cannot be called out on replay.
I'm with you on the general outline of this. I just haven't heard a compelling change yet, you know, because I think all the stuff that we talk about, it just makes it more complicated, more convoluted on replay to actually know, like, well, he got tagged and he was off the base, but this is a point where it's okay for him to be off the base. You know what I mean? Like, I agree that this is a very annoying part of baseball, and I would like to see it changed. I don't know that I've heard a great way to do it yet.
I mean, you could just say it's not reviewable. Like you could just say it's, you could just say you can't call for a review on a play on a, like a, basically a, you know, a tag on a tag play.
You can only review
whether or not like the tag beat him to first contact to the base, basically. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. I just feel like if you did that, you would end up with a lot of instances of like clearly wrong calls that you then couldn't overturn.
Well, I've come around on replay in general. I'd almost be okay if it went away because
no,
I think that the fun, you know, like bad calls, two things, bad calls have been forever. Like, and the fun of the game is like that excitement, that moment, you want that moment of euphoria of like, oh, he's safe. This is exciting. This is great. And we lose that. The other thing I would say would be take it out of the manager's hands, because I think this would actually solve that. That would solve that too, because you would basically have an ump in the booth or ump in the video room, basically saying I will only insert myself. It was like obviously wrong, and that it like would changes the spirit and like, because even like here's the thing is like with those like the tag plays, like the VR play I described, even like the team doing the challenge kind of knows they're getting away with something, right? Like it's like, I'm doing this because I can, not because it's like a good way to play the game, but like it helps me win, which is why I'm going to do it. Right. But I would prefer it if it was just like replay is going to be decided by a third party and we will only do it if it is obvious a horrible mistake was made that needs to be rectified.
I'm 100% okay with that.
I'm okay with like small, like bang, bang plays that where you can't really tell if they get them wrong. Sometimes that's fine with me. If it's debatable whether or not the call was right, then like I'm fine just going with the uncalled. I think it's, you need that excitement in the field. Like you see it in soccer. This is like never like, or touchdown catches in football. Like every time someone makes a touchdown catch, it's like, wait, we have to make sure. Like, is it going to stand? We can't celebrate until like we're sure it's going to stand. And as a fan, as a viewer, that stinks.
You know, these are supposed to be brief rants and you have a lot of thoughts about this one. Listen, here, I'm with you on, I've hated since day one that the managers get to call for this. Totally with you on that. You cannot remove replay entirely though, because then what will happen is you'll see some like egregiously wrong calls. The one I always go back to is the one, it's probably like 8 years ago now, where Todd Helton was like 9 feet off the bag and Jerry Harrison got called out. I know you know which one I'm talking about. Like that kind of stuff's insane. So you cannot have that knockout. But I'm with you. I don't like the managers doing it. I want to see some kind of good way to remove the, you know, your one molecule of air off the base and therefore you're out. Nobody actually wants that. Like nobody, there's not a side that's saying, I do like that. You know, it's like the one thing we're all in agreement on is just how do we do it? I don't know. Hopefully someone has a good idea for us. That'll do it for this week's podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening to the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. See you next week.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro recharge kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.